Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone, on Martin Luther King's birthday. His birthday actually falls on his birthday this year, January 15th. And even as we celebrate his birthday as the national holiday, this, if you don't already know, is a year in which we especially observe his death. It was 50 years ago this year, April 4th, 1968, that Dr. King was killed, and he lost, and we all lost, so much of his potential life. He was only 39 years old. He could have still been alive today. King would have been 89 on this birthday today had he lived. In the second hour of today's show, we will play excerpts from our Martin Luther King's birthday event at the Apollo Theater in Harlem yesterday, which I co-hosted with WNYC's Jamie Floyd. That's coming up in our second hour. And we arrive at this King holiday this year with a widening perception as a lead story unrelated to King, a widening perception in the headlines that the President of the United States is a racist. Those of you old enough to remember Dr. King's life and death will also remember this famous quote from the President of the United States just a few years later in 1973 during the Watergate investigation.
People have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
Ask people for just one Nixon quote, just one, and they'll probably say, I am not a crook. So now we have this Trump line. Listen carefully, because this was pretty off mic yesterday, but delivered to reporters last night.
I'm not a racist. I am the least racist person you have ever interviewed. That I can tell you.
I am not a racist. Nixon had to answer to whether he was a crook. Trump is having to answer to whether he is a racist after so many things he has said and done, including, of course, reportedly calling Haiti and every nation in Africa and El Salvador S-hole countries last Thursday in the context of who should be allowed to immigrate to, or in the case of Haitians and Salvadorans, even remain in the United States. That story took a turn yesterday toward conflicting accounts of what exactly the president did say in that regard at that immigration policy negotiating session. Here is Republican Senator Jeff Flake on CBS Face the Nation yesterday saying he was told about the S-hole remark shortly after the meeting.
I was in a meeting directly afterwards where those who had presented to the president our proposal spoke about the meeting, and They said those words were used before those words went public.
Senator Jeff Flake, but two of the most hardline immigration conservatives who are in the meeting have now started issuing denials that the president said what was quoted originally by Democratic Senator Dick Durbin, who was in the meeting, at least in the way it's gotten around. Here's one of them. Arkansas Republican Tom Cotton, sponsor of a bill to cut legal immigration in half, on ABC This Week.
I didn't hear it, and I was sitting no further away from Donald Trump than Dick Durbin was. And I know what Dick Durbin has said about Donald, or about the president's repeated statements, is incorrect.
So Durbin, is Durbin lying?
Senator Durbin has misrepresented what happened in White House meetings before, and he was corrected by Obama administration officials by it. But here's the point, John. We have an immigration system today that treats people based on where they're from or who they're related to, not who they are. That's not the system we need.
Senator Tom Cotton. With me now, national politics commentator Jamil Smith, contributing opinion writer to the LA Times, who you may know from his many appearances on this show, including guest hosting last year, senior editor at The New Republic and national politics reporter for MTV News during the 2016 campaign. Hi, Jamil. Thanks for doing this. Happy Martin Luther King Day, I think.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
And let's deal first with the factuality of what the president said. Just among the Republicans, there's disagreement. Sure. Lindsey Graham, who was in the room, seemed to confirm it in the context of a heated exchange that he and the president were having about immigration policy. And we played the Jeff Flake clip saying he was told about it right after as a sponsor of the compromise legislation, even though he wasn't in the room. But before Durbin revealed it publicly, first, there were no exact denials from Cotton and Perdue, the more conservative immigration negotiators in the room, and now there are. What do you make of it?
Well, I make that they're trying to sow confusion, it seems like. You have Republicans on, you know, the side of, you know, the harshest side of the DACA argument, you could say. The people who don't want it to exist, the people who don't want it renewed, people who don't really want to negotiate on it. And so what you see here is an attempt to cover for the president's racism in this particular instance with, you know, just, you know, very different stories. You have the first story saying, well, we don't remember what he said. And then all of a sudden they remember clear as a bell that they could, that they, you know, that he didn't say these remarks. I think people anywhere, regardless of whether he said as whole or as house, or referred to Haitians or African nations in anything similar to this manner, would remember it. So I think that I'm more inclined to trust the word of people who came out right away and said what they said and confirmed the account, as opposed to people who have had a few days to stew over it and wait until the Sunday shows to offer a denial.
I actually thought the interviewers of Perdue and Cotton on the Sunday shows didn't quite get there, because even if they deny Trump said asshole countries like Haiti and El Salvador and the African nations just like that, they weren't asked, did he use the word or a variant on the word like you just suggested? And how did he use the word? Because they didn't deny it. If you listen to those interviews carefully, they didn't deny that he used it somehow in the context of who to admit for immigration. And they weren't asked to say how he did use it as a follow-up. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, no. The exact quote from Senator Cotton was, I didn't hear that word either, which means that I didn't hear it doesn't mean necessarily that president did not say it. And so, again, they're trying to sow confusion. They're trying to give the president's defenders on the far right an excuse to go on Twitter and go on other, you know, forms of social media and proclaim that their president isn't a racist, because we all know, look, they understand the villainy of racism. They understand that it's the wrong thing. They don't want to be caught doing it. They don't want to be caught putting it into policy. And that's the real dangerous thing, I think, that's getting missed here. We're getting so caught up in the vulgarity of what the president said that we're, I think, to some degree missing the degree to which he is putting that vulgarity into action through this policy. And it's clear that judges who are refusing his court orders on DACA and on the travel ban understand how he is, you know, essentially making political flesh of this personal bias that he has. But I think more Americans need to be focused on the content of the content of the policy, as opposed, say, to the content of his character.
What do you make of the president actually stating out loud to microphones last night, I am not a racist?
Well, we've heard him often use the phrase, I am the least such and so person that you have ever met or ever interviewed. He's said this with sexism, certainly in the past when confronted with allegations of sexual abuse, dozens of them. I think what you see there is somebody who's been caught, and you hear somebody who is trying to assert to a loyal group of followers that he, in fact, is not the villain of the story. And as long as that is the case for them, they're fine. You know, I think that, you know, you're going to have a certain percentage of Americans who are never going to turn on him. That much is clear. But you have 70, right, close to, you know, 60 to 70% of the nation who either is convinced that he, you know, did, you know, not only this racist thing now, but has a history of these kinds of actions. But also, you know, there are people who are, you know, confused and want to investigate more. Those are going to be enough people to make a difference in a national election. They may be able to gerrymander their way into maintaining their House majority in 2018. But frankly, there's no calculation I can see right now where Donald Trump is able to effectively do his job representing all Americans now that he has evidenced himself as this virulent a racist. I just think that being this racist makes it very difficult to do the actual job of president of the United States.
He's the president of his base. That's been demonstrated over and over again. And listeners, if you want to weigh in on any of this, and not just is the president a racist, but also the policy. Remember, they have to get to a policy by this Friday to avoid a government shutdown, at least potentially. And we're going to get to that part too. So give us a call on any of this with Jamil Smith, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And just to expand on what you were just saying, Jamil, it's not like we just learned something new about Trump. He opened his campaign saying Mexicans are rapists and drug dealers, though I assume some are good people. Then the total and complete Muslim ban. Judge Curiel is biased because he's Mexican. Good people on both sides in Charlottesville. We could go back to his Obama birtherism and on. His entire political career is based on trying to exclude or diminish black and brown people from poor people in Haiti to the president of the United States. So what's really any news here in terms of the president's character or political approach?
Yeah, there's really not a whole lot of news here, but I think it offers an opportunity for people who may have, you know, questioned these things despite all of this evidence to hear it for themselves, you know, to understand it for themselves anew. And I think that, you know, look, I don't need him to say the N-word. I mean, a lot of people are saying like, oh, why doesn't he just come out and just say it? I mean, you know, but we misunderstand that as the ultimate expression of racism is a slur, is something someone says. It's not what someone says, it's what someone does. And I think that what we, you know, need to do is use this opportunity to understand the mechanics of racism in a better way. And what better day to do that than today?
Indeed. How useful a debate do you think it is on Martin Luther King Day or any other day to actual progressive policy to debate the question of whether the president deserves the label racist? I mean, we can all say as a matter of fact that he uses racism. He uses for political purposes a certain group of Americans' racism to inflame it, to bring them out to the polls, to advance his political career. That's a matter of fact. But getting to his heart, whether he deserves the label racist, does it do anything for progressive policy goals to debate that?
Well, here's the thing. If progressive policy goals inherently should be, you know, targeting racism or in systemic racism that, you know, is making itself permanent through policy, then it is necessary to recognize the obvious. It is necessary for all Americans to be able to agree on one set of facts regarding racism, that it exists, that it is systemic. And I think that we need to, you know, use this opportunity, again, to really acknowledge one set of facts. We need to acknowledge that, you know, this is racist. We need to all be able to agree on that. When the president of the United States deems Haiti and African nations as whole countries, and then proclaims that he'd really prefer more immigrants from a Scandinavian country that's 90% white, that sends a message. It's a pretty clear message. And I think that if people can't agree on this, then how are we ever going to agree on solutions that, you know, on policies like DACA and other things that are systemically, you know, address systemic racism? How are we going to ever agree on these things so that, you know, we could actually move forward? This is the key. We need to be able to at least agree on this, that this is racist.
Lameen in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lameen. Lameen, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Lameen, you're on the air. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Thanks so much for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah. Brian, thank you for taking my call. I'm an African, and I have been so offended. And this is what I want to say is, like, if this president is saying he's not racist, it's a surprise. Even David Duke doesn't say I'm a racist, and nobody says a racist even doesn't call themselves a racist. This is just unfortunate, and it's a very rough time for this country. Originally an African. I love this country. My kids are born here. I love this country like I love my own native country. But what I'm going to say is just an ignorant, like, the people who are trying to validate this or who are trying to make sense out of this, it's just unfortunate. Like, the white people, they went to Africa and they went to that asshole country to bring slaves here to build this country. They didn't go to Scandinavia or Norway, England. Or so if somebody is trying to say this, something like this, senseless, it's just unfortunate. Like, it's really, really unfortunate. And then I'm trying to see which African countries is going to honor this man and then roll a red carpet and try to, you know, welcome Donald Trump to Africa. I'm going to have that problem with those countries, because the best way to fight a bully is to take it to his face. Those African countries, we might not have resources, that much opportunity. What Africa have is we have compassion. We have love for each other, and we don't tear down each other. We lift each other up. It's unfortunate. That's my comment. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you so much for calling. And you know, Jamil, it's not just African countries who aren't rolling out the red carpet, as Lamine said he hopes they will not do. It's now the UK. There was so much pushback there about Trump coming on a state visit, which was planned, that Trump canceled it the other day. I think that got lost in the news, but there were going to be such massive demonstrations, apparently, when he came. And even the Queen, if I've got my facts right, confirm this for me if you know it, but this is how I heard it. Even the Queen was saying, we don't want him here. And then he canceled it. And guess what? He blamed it falsely on Obama for changing the U.S. embassy, which was actually done by Bush.
Yes, the Queen, according to reports, the Queen was stating that she was humiliated by the whole situation. I'd think more so than the idea of Trump visiting. But, you know, perhaps she has private feelings on that. But here's the thing with that. I think, you know, it certainly did get noticed because Trump made it a story. He went and tweeted that the real reason he was canceling the visit. Of course, it wasn't canceled on him. He was canceling it. The real reason was because apparently Obama had moved the embassy in a real estate move that he didn't like. Well, actually, it was George W. Bush that did it, and it was related to terrorism. And it just underscores one common theme with the asshole remark is the real intellectual laziness of this president. I think, you know, racism inherently is intellectual laziness. And you see here someone who just doesn't even bother to learn the facts, doesn't even bother to learn what is actually going on with his own job, doesn't understand how to do it, doesn't understand the history of it. And what he's doing is simply just trying to cover his own behind the entire time, no matter what, every day, that's his top priority. And ostensibly, this is a public service job. The only one being really serviced in this job is Donald Trump.
Wesley in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Wesley. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you so much for taking my call. My point is this. The proof that he is racist beyond the shadow of a doubt was in selecting an appropriate country. He picked, I would say, the whitest of the white European countries. Why didn't he pick Slovenia, for example, where his wife is from? So it's obvious for anyone that knows geography what he was talking about. I'm an African American, and this is pure racial. It's not even geographical, and that's my comment. Also, it's ironic that he would choose the eve of Martin Luther King Day to express this racism.
Right. He wasn't even thinking about it. I'm sure it was the furthest thing from his mind. Wesley, thank you very much. And yeah, the whitest of the white countries. Why can't we have more people from Norway instead of El Salvador and Haiti and the African countries? And nobody asked Senator Cotton or Senator Perdue on television yesterday when they were denying the word asshole that about whether he said that.
Right. Or whether or not it's even wrong to express these kinds of sentiments. I mean, here's the thing. Their denials, you know, are part and parcel of how racism sustains itself in this country. I mean, you know, you have somebody express racism or demonstrate racism, and then you have essentially, you know, their allies go out and gaslight entire communities about what happened. They say, no, that isn't what happened. That's not what happened. That's not what you heard. That's not what you saw. That's not what you witnessed. It's not what you're even experiencing. And so that's it speaks, you know, again, this, you know, we can talk about how this is all about rhetoric, but all of this and how it's playing out speaks to the way the racism works in this country.
And I think it does say a lot about the president that he did this behind closed doors, unless he was thinking so many steps ahead that he thought, oh, Dick Durbin's going to go out and say this to the press that I said that. He was in a private negotiating session. There had been the open televised negotiation session a couple of days earlier in which he said, I want a solution for DACA. I want the wall. I will take whatever compromise that includes those two things that a bipartisan consensus in Congress can come up with. And this plan presented to him on Thursday by Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin and signed on to others from each party had the down payment on the wall that he wanted for this fiscal year, $1.6 billion, and of course had the DACA legalization, and it transferred immigrant visas from people in the immigration lottery, which he wanted to abolish, to people who are here under TPS from Haiti and El Salvador, and reportedly that's what made him explode. So what do you know about the exchange between Lindsey Graham and the president during that negotiation session? The headline that's broken out is that Graham said the United States is an idea, not a race. And that's a pretty heavy moment right there on first principles if the president said anything that suggested he thought it is a race.
Yeah. And here's the thing is that Donald Trump won the presidency based upon the latter idea that America is a race, that America inherently was founded as a white Judeo-Christian country with Judeo-Christian principles at its heart, and that those principles and purity can only be maintained, both ideological purity and racial purity can only be maintained if there is a certain actual physical racial balance in the country of particular, you know, people or, you know, particular ethnic minorities and majorities. So what you see there is a complete misunderstanding of what the American idea is supposed to be. Now, if America is this wonderful, welcoming place that welcomes all immigrants from all shores, this is a moment to show that it is going to live up to its ideals to not only the people from nations like Haiti and nations from the continent of Africa, but also to those folks who are Haitian and African and African American who are already living here right now. And so the promise is something that's being violated by the policy of this administration. And Lindsey Graham, if in fact he did say that, was right to do so.
And Trump says repeatedly, as does Steve Bannon, that a reason for limiting immigration is because the U.S. is a civilization, a culture, which suggests, even if he doesn't say it explicitly by going to the next line that's implied, that therefore we don't want as many black or brown people coming in or Muslim people. Let me replay part of what Senator Tom Cotton said on ABC, remember immigration hardliner, in which he says immigration should not be about race, but I think can actually taken to be to mean that it is. Listen.
Here's the point, John. We have an immigration system today that treats people based on where they're from or who they're related to, not who they are. That's not the system we need.
Tom Cotton on CBS, to correct myself, Face the Nation with John Dickerson. Cotton wants immigration to be on an individual merit system. And many people will hear that and think, well, that's the opposite of race-based. Of course, he also wants legal immigration cut in half. But have you thought of the idea of merit-based immigration rather than nationality-based or family-based as a major change for our country? I think Canada actually leans that way. Is that racist, in your opinion?
Well, inherently, when the people, you got to think about who's controlling the levers here. Who is deciding the merit? in this particular instance. You got to look at racial comp.
And what criteria?
Right. I mean, let's look at, you know, who devises the criteria? Who is in charge of making the final decision? You have an administration right now that is serving and doing the work of white supremacy. I don't trust them to create the standards by which, you know, someone would merit admission to this country. I mean, let's think about the ways in which they're qualifying it. This president has just told us that the merit, you know, that he doesn't consider anyone from Haiti or African countries, by the way, which are more highly educated than a lot of American workers. He doesn't, you know, use that criteria, you know, in his own standards that he just stated to senators. So why should we believe that somehow would worm its way into the actual policy when this Republican Congress is not doing anything to put checks on this president?
Yeah.
So that, you know, the idea of a meritocracy in America, really, frankly, it's been a fallacy for a very long time. I think anyone who is, you know, in a marginalized community in this country can put the lie to that. But, you know, in this particular instance, you know, this is also a distraction from the real issue here. DACA recipients were brought here not by their own will. There's no way to judge the merit of an 8-year-old boy who was brought from Mexico or brought from El Salvador or brought from Haiti. And, you know, along with these parents who are just seeking a better life, there's no way to judge the merit of a baby. How are you going to do that? So there are inherent flaws in the denial that they are putting forth. It shows that they're frankly not giving this really all that much thought, and expecting that Americans just buy whatever they offer. You have a real situation here. You have 800,000 people in this country who have been basically put, you know, have the president put a ransom on their heads. And the ransom is the wall. And now we have people arguing that the Democrats should give in and give them the walls to save these people. You don't negotiate with terrorists. And this is legislative terrorism in a way.
Even that stat you just gave, that African immigrants have college degrees at a higher rate than native-born Americans. I saw that the Republican pollster Frank Luntz tweeted out one of those stats over the weekend. I think it was that African immigrants have 43% college degree rate, which is much higher than the native-born population here and much higher than other immigrant groups. But the pushback to that is, yeah, that just shows that Black people have to be more qualified than everybody else to get the same benefit, meaning admission to this country. So even that is a form of racism. When people from Africa are admitted on the same basis as people from the S-hole countries of a century ago, you know, how Italy was considered and Ireland was considered and the Jews from Eastern Europe were considered, that's when we'll be closer to equality.
Right. And I think this point was made very well by Damon Young on The Root, Very Smart Brothers website. You know, you cannot simply, you know, respond to these kinds of, you know, racial or racist events by simply quoting off the best of the best, you know, from these particular countries. Oh, Haiti, well, we actually deserve to have all these immigrants because, you know, we are particularly excellent, more excellent than, you know, the average American or African American, what have you. We can't get really into that because it really feeds into the system in which, is benefiting from this, and that's systemic racism. Look, Haitian immigrants, if a guy is a janitor, okay, with no college education, and he wants to come to America, he should be able to do so. Okay, if there is someone who is a poor school teacher with basic education in an African nation, he or she should be able to come here. Okay, we should not be judging immigrants' value or worth based upon our estimation of their intelligence.
So here we are at this moment as we begin to run out of time with Jamil Smith, contributing opinion writer to the LA Times. Here we are at this moment on the policy level where the government will largely shut down this Friday, if there is no spending deal, immigration negotiations as part of that, are more complicated today than they were before this latest outburst of whatever you want to call it on Thursday from all sides. And so where do you think things stand?
Well, I think that Democrats, if they have any principles, and I trust that they, you know, at least some of them do, they will hold the line here. They will refuse to do a deal that authorizes a wall that we don't need. It's a monument to xenophobia, in, you know, for the sake of 800,000 DACA recipients. They're going to actually put forth a good and progressive, you know, alternative to that. And if this president doesn't want to accept that, then they're, you know, they're going to have to hold the line and, you know, and shut down this government. I think that, you know, Americans are smart enough to understand whose fault that is.
Do you think necessarily that last statement is true, that if the Democrats in a year where they seem set up to potentially take back the House and maybe even the Senate and really stymie the Trump agenda in that way, that they gain more than they risk by refusing to delay the ultimate DACA vote, decouple it from the spending bill, mm-hmm. and move on?
I definitely think it is to Democrats' benefit to not give in to what Trump is trying to do here. Look, even if he were to get this down payment on the wall that he requested, that he asked for it to be in the bill, and was that he ultimately rejected vociferously, I think that even if that were in this bill, he'd still find a way to criticize it. He'd still find a way to make Democrats, you know, hold, you know, take the blame for whatever you know, legislative ineptitude the Republicans exhibit. So what you're gonna, he's gonna blame you anyway, Democrats. You might as well hold the line and hold to your principles and stick to the demands of what your Democratic base is asking you to do. And if lest we need any reminders, that's the majority of the country. So let's see what they do.
Jamil Smith, contributing opinion writer to the LA Times. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jamil.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.